listening to the Charlie Polillo Show on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Presented by Tri-Eagle Energy. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios. Here's Charlie Polillo.
Sunday afternoon at the Fertitta Center, U of H and Oklahoma State. Nice interconference matchup as we move toward mostly conference play the rest of the season. Within the next couple of weeks, heading to town to work that game on ESPN along with Mark Neely. Fran Fraschilla, who is all over the Big 12 and all kinds of college basketball, NBA draft, and the international scene. And looking forward to this. First time getting him on the program. So much ground to cover in 10, 12 minutes. Perhaps if I somehow don't horribly offend him, we can do some of the other stuff we just won't have time to get to today at a future date. Fran, Charlie, I much appreciate it. And I figured I'd open with this. As an old coach, I know you just love to go to practices and visit with coaches. So when you go to U of H, whether it's today, tomorrow, and you visit with Kelvin yep. Sampson, you pull out, I guess it would have to be a little VHS or Betamax of 1995 Manhattan, the little 13 seed, 77, the fourth seed, Oklahoma, 67, NCAA tournament, Kelvin Sampson's first season coaching the Sooners. Do you carry that
yeah.
with you?
No, you know, great memories, but I have to tell you what came out of that performance by my team that day was a great friendship with Kelvin Sampson. You know, he's a coach's coach, and I remember we were together a couple weeks later doing some NCAA Final Four stuff for TV, and the first thing he said to me when he saw me was, "Hey, you're a heck of a young coach." And it meant a lot because in a business that's very competitive, you know, friendships are hard to come by sometimes, true ones. And, you know, it's, they transcend whether you've won or lost a particular game. That particular day, my Manhattan team played great. Kelvin had a great first season at Oklahoma. I remember watching them on TV in the Big 8. They were knocking off Kansas and Oklahoma State and some really good teams. And we were just fortunate that day. But out of that game actually became a really good friendship and really happy that he's back on the college sidelines and doing a great job of U of H.
Well, I know you're a Brooklyn guy who coached at Manhattan College, which is in the Bronx, and I know that because I'm a Long Island guy. Just weird how some stuff works out. Meanwhile, Kelvin Sampson, I mean, if miracle worker is too strong within the context of college basketball, at least,
yeah.
the job that he has done, where would you begin in summing up what he's done? And then frame the matchup Sunday. This should be fun, Cougars and
yeah,
Cowboys.
Yeah, you know what, Kelvin? Kelvin has always been a program builder. He's always been at places where it's more of a have-nots rather than the haves until he went to Indiana. And, you know, that unfortunately was a painful situation. I'm just tickled to death that out of that situation, he was able to resurrect his career and now rebuilding another program. But, you know, Kelvin is really a coach's coach. I will say this on Sunday. I've said it to people. If I was a young coach, if I was in my 20s and I got a chance to spend 1 year with any coach in the country, he would be at the top of the list simply, Charlie, because you really don't learn. This is not a knock on Roy Williams or Mike Krzyzewski or John Calipari, but you really don't learn how to coach when you're watching coaches coach the best players in college basketball. You learn when you watch guys that get the most out of their talent. Kelvin is certainly at the top of that list. It's all about, you know, toughness, competitiveness, togetherness, defense. And honestly, if I had one of my sons who both are in coaching now could spend a year with Kelvin, they would be much, much better prepared for what really is college basketball because most of us who coach don't coach at a have. It's usually a have-not.
In promoting Sunday in particular, you had Oklahoma State in Brooklyn. A cool walk through the neighborhood piece, by the way, with Mike Boynton, the Cowboys head coach. I'm sure this will be, at bare minimum, Fran, the only game in the country with a Chris Harris Jr. on each team.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. You know, I noticed that when I was studying up two different kinds of players. But, yeah, you know, it's unfortunate for Oklahoma State, Charlie, is they have a chance to be really, really good. Unfortunately, their starting point guard and really a rising star. Nobody really knows much about this youngster, Isaac Likely from Dallas, Texas. He put 26-8 on Syracuse in a win up in Brooklyn. He's got an illness. Now, I'm not exactly sure what it is. I have a suspicion that it's one of those deals that's a 2 or 3 week deal, kind of like Sam Darnold of the Jets went through. That's all I could probably surmise right now. So it's really unfortunate. They've lost, I think they're 7-0. They lost two games I really think they would have won had he had been healthy against Georgetown and Wichita State. But unfortunately, if he's not healthy, this really puts a lot of pressure on Oklahoma State's guards because, you know, Kelvin's teams are going to play great defense, especially in the backcourt.
Yeah, Likely was awesome up at Barclays Center. They have a couple of 40% wing three-point shooters, though it feels like most teams do. Fran, what do you make? Negligible impact, a little more? At least moderately longer three-point line in the college game?
Oh, it's had a negative impact to this point, Charlie, and it may change, but you know, not only is three-point shooting down, you could say marginally, but I think from 34.5% to 33% is kind of significant, although you wouldn't seem like it. But two-point shooting is down, which means there's a lot of players and coaches that are allowing players to shoot those mid-range and long twos, which is just not a good, you know, shot for most people, particularly college guys. And so offense is down, which is kind of unfortunate because offense has been on an uptick. I hate to say it this way, but college basketball this year, it's got no great team. It's got no really great star yet. There's very good players, of course, but I'm a little concerned this year, and I hope it's just a blip because, you know, as you've seen, four number ones have already been knocked off in the first 5 weeks of the season. But I think the more concerning issue is if the offense hopefully doesn't disappear because it was on an uptick until this year.
Well, very oddly, Fran, I'm not sure how this is even possible. Since we've been talking, we've both been called for a charge.
Yeah, I know. But I think you flopped.
Just an early season overreaction and it will level off, or is this what the powers that be want?
I you know what? I don't know why they put this flop rule in because I can tell you the majority of the officials do not like it. It's hard enough to call a block and a charge without figuring out whether at the same time an offensive or defensive player is flopping. And I find it just disconcerting, honestly. I'm a rules guy. I'm a fan of the officiating. And oftentimes what the average fan doesn't realize is the officials, you could boo them at a given game, but they're only doing what the coaches want because the coaches are in charge of the rules committee. And so this flopping thing, I don't know where it came out of or what. I didn't think it was a major issue. To me, the best way to eliminate the block charge is to have offensive players not run over guys. And, you know, if a defender's not legal, you call foul on him. But, you know, Manu Ginobili figured it out 20 years ago with the Euro step. You know, that's what you do. You teach your players how not to run over defenders. And it's not been good for the game in the first 5 weeks, I'll say that.
Talking with ESPN's Fran Fraschilla, 2 o'clock Sunday, U of H in Oklahoma State at a rollicking Fertitta Center. I know you've long loved the international game. Is there one more rule change, if I empowered you to say we're doing this in college basketball, one change that you would make?
Yeah, absolutely, the four quarters. You know, right now college basketball on the men's side is the only place in the world that I'm aware of where we still play two halves. And the beauty of four quarters, as we've seen in the NIT experiments, is that team fouls get reset at the end of the quarter. In quarters, it's five team fouls in the bonus, not seven. But when we start a second quarter in basketball, let's say at the women's side, you revert back to zero team fouls, which means there's less of a parade to the foul line in the last 10 minutes of the first half. It speeds the game up. It's logical. And the only reason I've heard for them not changing it yet is it eliminates one TV timeout, which we can go to what seems to be a 4-minute commercial break. And I guess that pays my salary. So I can't complain too much. But I think if there's a way to figure out four quarters on the men's side, it would make for a simpler, faster, more fun free-flowing game.
All right, I referenced your passion for the international game, and you're the go-to guy every year, the run-up to the draft, and then draft night on the prospects. When did you very first see Luka Doncic play?
Ooh, 15 years old at a camp in Treviso, Italy. He was considered like a rising star among like the teenage group. Had no earthly idea he would be this good this soon. Now, when he played in the EuroLeague as a 17- and 18-year-old, I, along with others, this didn't take rocket scientists. If you understand how good the EuroLeague, it's the second best league in the world to the NBA, you knew what he was doing was definitely going to translate to the NBA. But honestly, Charlie, to say that he would be this good this soon, putting up numbers that, you know, relate to what LeBron James has done over his career, Oscar Robertson with triple-doubles, I can't imagine that anybody honestly thought he would be this good before the age of 21. I think he turns 21 in February.
Yeah, end of February. Then he can raise a glass to himself if he'd like to. Hey, a couple of other things before I let you go. I guess just a general overview of the downtrodden, rebuilding, retooling Big 12 so far this season.
Well, you know, I jokingly said it's rebuilding, but just looking at the numbers, it's still the number two ranked league, according to Ken Pom. It's 7-2 against other power conferences, I think I saw somewhere. It's got some really good young players, as it always does. Kansas is back to being a contender for a national title. Texas Tech, without their leading scorer, a terrific freshman, Jamias Ramsey, knocks off number one. The greatest thing about the Big 12, Charlie, I say this every year, because there aren't that many one-and-dones, we get to watch, guys like me and the fans get to watch rising stars that seemingly come out of nowhere where, for example, like Buddy Hield, Devontae Graham, Frank Mason, Javon Carter at West Virginia, George Niang. These are all guys that oftentimes came in like non-top 100 guys, and over 4 years with great coaching, great competition, turned out to be really good college players. And the Big 12 certainly has their share of rising stars again. I'll just say this. There's six coaches in this league out of 10 that have coached in the Final Four and 8 of 10 that have been to the Elite Eight. That says a lot about the power of this league.
Oh, preposterous coaching depth in this conference. You mentioned the recruiting. Might you start there in summing up what frankly have been very disappointing overall results for Shaka Smart through 4 seasons that he has had the one and dones?
Yeah, no, I would say some of it is bad luck. You know, honestly, they've been fortunate to get 3 big guys in a row, each of them who wouldn't have had a major impact on any college program, let alone Texas. I don't care if they went to Kentucky or Duke, Texas, but Mo Bamba and most recently Jackson Hayes did not affect winning in the Big 12 because it's such a junior-senior-oriented league. And each of those guys, along with Jared Allen, the homegrown kid from Austin, they all left after 1 year and, you know, are making their mark on the NBA now. But I can tell you close up, none of them was a major impact on the Big 12 race. He finally has kids that are going to be 3- and 4-year guys. And although they're not playing great, they are 8-1 against a good schedule. And it looks, at least to this point, they're heading to a situation where I think they'll be back in the NCAA tournament. But some of it's been bad luck, and some of it's just the prospect of in college basketball right now, for the most part, you got to get old and stay old. And they just haven't been old until this year.
And lastly, Fran, to circle it back to the game, you'll be in town calling on Sunday. U of H off a Sweet 16 season turnover in terms of starters on the perimeter,
yep.
Losing 3 key guys. Off what you've seen of U of H and obviously what you know of Kelvin Sampson,
yeah,
where would you point to as a relative ceiling for this Cougs version?
Oh, I think they got a high ceiling. I already mentioned they're going to get great coaching all year. This is a really young team. When you look at that backcourt with 2 sophomores and a junior and then 2 freshmen who are terrific coming off the bench in Mills and Sasser, not let alone the big kids, guys he's redshirting, and then another good recruiting year, I think that this team's ceiling is probably Sweet 16 if everything goes well. But rest assured, if you're a Coug fan, you have a program now. I mean, I don't anticipate a major drop-off from being back in postseason play virtually every year, now that Kelvin and then eventually Kellen will be coaching this team. With the facilities they've got now and the talent in the Houston area and around the country and the interest in Cougar basketball, they hired the perfect guy. I can't wait to talk to Mac Rhodes before the game on Sunday, who's now at Baylor. It was an exciting hire. I'm so glad to see Kelvin back on the sideline on the college side because as I said earlier, he made his mistakes. He paid for them with the NCAA, but he's a coach's coach. And that's what he is. And I can tell you, coaches admire not only his ability to coach, but also the fact that it's an adversity-driven job, and Kelvin's handled his share of personal adversity, and he's come out on the other side better for it.
Lastly, Fran, on the lighter side, you work with myriad play-by-play guys. Is it even possible to say anything good about Doug Sherman?
The one redeeming quality Doug has is that he remembers me when I was coaching on the sidelines at Manhattan when he was a young sportscaster up in Albany, and we have maintained a great friendship. And in all seriousness, you know him because I know you went to school together, that fake journalism program, broadcast journalism program up at Syracuse. But no, in all honesty, Doug is a class man and so easy to work with. Best compliment I can give him is, if I don't see him for 8 months and we work together for the first time, it's like we worked together 3 days ago.
Yeah, one of the great people that I've encountered, much less the broadcasters. Okay, I have one last, and it's not even a full question. We could do another whole visit on this. Did you tear up when you watched the Felipe Lopez 30 for 30?
You know, I did. I did, yeah. And anybody who hasn't seen that 30 for 30, Dominican Dream, I was fortunate to have been a part of the resurrection of St. John's, in particular Felipe. And even though St. John's really helped catapult me into a great broadcasting career, and they've never recovered, I might add, not that I have a long memory, but I am Italian. No, it was great to see Felipe in that. I've seen him since in person, obviously. We're still close. But, I was a part of the heyday of the Big East, which – even as an assistant at Providence and then 2 years at St. John's is a great memory for a coach. And Felipe Lopez is one of the greatest all-time people I've ever been around. And, he's the Prince of New York. He still is.
Hey, Palillo is Italian also, so my paisano. I get it, Fran. Hey, this was great. I appreciate it. And, Doug, if you happen to be listening, thanks for helping facilitate. Safe travels in, Fran, and should be a fun one, U of H and Oklahoma State Sunday. Hope we can do it again.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Charlie.